Yeah. You would have reminded me. I almost forgotten. Hi, I'm Warren. I'm an alcoholic. I can't say a humble alcoholic. When I got here, I knew about this, and I said, where's the cameras? I thought it was going to be live internet. I said, it'd be really cool. So I sort of said, no, we're borderline as it is, you know. I was feeling a little bit ungrateful today. It's funny that happens even with a lot of 24 hours back to back. You think, always be grateful and always, you know, everything would be perfect, but perfection isn't one of my things, I guess. I'm a long way from it. I was feeling a bit ungrateful this morning. Not great when I got up, after that, it sort of came on slowly. I had planned to go, I fly these remote controlled airplanes, and I had planned to go up flying today with a friend, another member, and it was a perfect day. It was a beautiful day. I'm on holidays, it was great. But you know, we're allowed to make plans for tomorrow, we're allowed to plan, but we can't plan the results. They were not responsible for that, apparently. I found out that again today. And I got a call this morning saying, Daddy, we're going on vacation today, but our car died. We can't make it there, so. And they have a van full of stuff. I have a girlfriend who's been off sick with cancer, actually, since February. She's been very, very sick and can't drive. We have two vehicles, so I figure, well, I can loan her the small car, because I need the big car to fit the plane in. It's a big plane, you know. And we talked, and apparently it won't fit in the small car, all the stuff they have, so I'm trying to arrange a way. Okay, I'll bring both the cars up north, I'll bring them up north, and then come back down, put the plane in, go and fly. And I'm organizing all this, and I go in and tell a girlfriend, well, I tell her, I said, is it all right if we do this? I'm asking her. I've already decided, you know. But I didn't tell her that. I forgot. And she knew right away that I'd already decided, because she answered me a little bit rough. Now, all these years, and I haven't yet learned that you can't argue with a woman. You know, forget it. It's impossible. God gave them a gift, you know. And that's to remember everything a guy has done to her in the last whatever, since she's known him, you know, and some before with their exes, with his exes, you know. And they have a memory of that. I can't remember one thing, you know, that she's done. She said, well, she's never done anything wrong this way, you know. But anyway, so started a little bit of an argument. She says, we need the small car because she has a doctor's appointment tomorrow and she can only sit in that one. She can't sit in my Thunderbird. It's too low and it's bumpy. And, oh, damn. Don't get things my way. So I said, well, we'll see. You know. But she was miserable almost all day. You know, it was, and I tried to do everything to make up and I couldn't. And I ended up giving the Thunderbird to my daughter and take it up north. Okay, go. And I kept the focus. I lose. I'm telling you, no matter what I do, I always lose. Can't do anything to it. So I was a bit ungrateful, and I did everything. Then around tonight, she's still feeling a bit miserable, and she said, I feel like an ice cream, and I feel like here's the guilt payments now. You know, they know about guilt too. I'm going to go out to the store for sure. I'll get anything just to you know. Anyway. So I was feeling a bit ungrateful on the way to the meeting here and trying to get rid of that. And I'm coming up the road here. I see this guy in one of these low bicycles coming up green. You know how big that hill is, eh? And he's pedaling away. I said, boy, that's pretty good. I was going to say something on the way by. And I noticed he's only got one leg. It's a wooden leg. I said, oh, Jesus. Here I got two cars and I'm pissed off because I'm driving the smaller one, you know, and I can't fit my plane. I got a plane, you know. Oh, Jesus Christ. Talk about guilt. Anyway. Did I just swear? Sorry. Erase that last remark. Anyway, so I guess that was a lesson I needed to learn and I needed to share it so that I can remember it. And it's a funny thing about sharing. I always get something out of it because I hear myself talk and that's one thing. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'm here today, well, today, yeah. So I had a good day so far. Not over yet. I'm here to say what happened, what it's like, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And it's quite simple. I'm the second oldest family of eight, born quite a few years ago. My father, it's safe to say, was an alcoholic. He died an alcoholic. Well, he died a sober alcoholic. He had 9 months sobriety when he got killed in an accident. It was exactly the way he wanted to die. And he was involved in an accident with a guy that was exactly my age at the time. I was 28, and I wasn't in the program yet. And he had been sort of partying the night before, lost control and hit him head on, and that exactly the way he wanted to go. But it sort of hit me kind of hard. You know? During the years, I didn't know. It was sort of a love-hate relationship with him. You know, I was a bit mixed up as a kid. And even with my mother, when he would come home, it seemed that she knew what buttons. So I told you, a woman is given a gift that she can push a guy. She has a remote control long before television was invented. They got a remote control, and they can press a button to get you really pissed off. You know. So I grew up not knowing whether it was her fault he was drinking, or you know, he was just thirsty, or had a lot of pressure with 8 kids. And I can imagine that was a lot of pressure. I had 2, and it was a lot. I felt different than everybody else, not just because I was in an alcoholic family. There was other kids with alcoholic families too, you know, and I felt really, really different. I didn't know what I was. I guess I was pretty normal, actually, but I didn't know it. And everybody else just seemed like they were enjoying life more than I was, and they seemed to have less trouble achieving things in life and mixing with people. I didn't mix with people too well. There was a few guys I could, but they were a select few and elite. And I was pretty bored with school. Got into a bit of trouble at school because I hung around with those elite special guys. You know. Nowadays they have special schools for them. I probably would have been there. I probably wouldn't have done that right there. So I don't know. Anyway, around the age of 13 or 14, somebody once called me a pervert. And I said, yeah, I knew what I was. It's great. I'll accept that because I didn't know what I was. I really didn't know. There wasn't such a thing as you know, an alcoholic. I didn't know what I was, but I knew I was different than everybody else. And when they called me a pervert, I thought, hey, that's a good name. That's something. It gives me some identity, you know. So that was my identity, and I was sort of proud of it. Although I really didn't do anything to deserve that, you know. Even if I'd like to brag about it, it was a pretty boring childhood, you know. excuse me. Most of my life as a child or a teenager, I grew up being afraid of my father because I never knew what kind of a mood he'd be in when he got home or what kind of mood my mother would put him in. And so I was pretty much scared of him. And I also swore to myself that an alcoholic, I noticed, wasn't very manly. They go into the taverns and drink, and I figured they were chickens, you know, and not real men. And I would never do what my father did. I would never go to a tavern. I would never drink like that. I'd be a better father by far. You know, this is what I had in my mind, you know, because as a teenager, that's what I was like. But when I started drinking in my teens, I remember my first drink, it was my first communion. And I'm Anglican, so it was like 14 years old. And I remember taking the thing, it's real wine, and I never listened to it, so I didn't know you're just supposed to wet your lips, and I just sort of grabbed it, and he grabbed it back from me, And I walked down to my seat, and I could feel that wine going down in my stomach, and man, that just felt so good in there. That felt really, really good. It gave me a good feeling, just a little bit, imagine it. And I told my dad, it's the only time I ever saw my dad in church in my whole life was for that communion, you know, and for burials and stuff, you know, weddings. And I told him, I said, you got to get some of that wine. That is really good. I knew nothing. I didn't know that all booze is good stuff, you know. And a little later on, I started drinking what I could. I didn't really work much. I worked at the bowling alleys at Pinboy and stuff like that, and I couldn't really afford to drink much. But whenever I did drink, I had to drink as much as I could, all that there was. You know, my first little running with the law, sort of, and with trouble. I was still only 14, but don't worry, there's not much from 14 to 30. So I'm gonna just jump like crazy. I'm not going to go blow by blow. But when I, it was one big blackout. When I was 14, I was working this bowling alley until like 3 in the morning. And the Saturday morning, well, you sleep in usually. And one of the guys in the bowling alley said, yeah, I'll give you a job tomorrow morning. You can work on the milk run with me. I started at 5. I said, hey, that's great. It's not far from my place. It's great. So at 3 o'clock, I was talking to the other pin boys. I don't know what I'll do from that little fine. And he said, well, get a case of beer. I said, great idea, you know. I'd never drank beer before. They go and they got one from this guy, the taxi driver who sells beers to the boys and everybody else anytime they want, you know. And they come behind the bowling alley and they said, here. And they started to leave. I said, where are you going? I thought we were going to party. I said, no, we're not working at 5 in the morning. You drink it alone. And here I'm 14, I got a case of 12. They taught me how to open one off the other. So I know I drank 11, but I don't know about the last one. But I swear I drank them all, except like I don't know about the last one. And I was pretty drunk. During the night, the guy that had sold the beer didn't pick me up and brought me down to the door. He was going to bring me for supper. He went in and had supper at this Chinese place, came out and never gave me anything to eat. And then let me drive the car going home. That's not very smart, you know. And I was so drunk, for 11 beer, imagine. Let me drive the car, but he had other things in mind I didn't know about. He was what they called me, a pervert, you know. Whatever, I just thought he was gay, but actually he was a child, and that's right. That's the one you get me drunk too. Well, he tried to fool around with me when I was driving, and I just swore it. I remember that part. And then he'd take his hands off of me and do it again, and he grabbed the keys and said, I'm going to stop the car. I said, if you don't stop it. Well, I said, you stop what you're doing, I'll stop what I'm doing. And we had an agreement that we got to Hudson. And they say God takes care of drunks and little boys. Well, I was a little boy drunk, so he was really taking care of me. We got to Hudson, and he didn't want to stop us anyway. He said, pull in this little road here near the school. And he said, we'll change places, because I don't want the cops and somebody to see us. But he had something else, I guess, in mind, which I didn't. I was very naive. I didn't know. Stopped the car, and some lights coming behind. I turned around, it's the cops. They've been following, so I've been saved again, you know. Get up quick. So he had to do everything quick, and he brought me to where I had to work, and it took off. So I was waiting there. I was pretty drunk. It wasn't 5 o'clock yet. So it must have been like, I don't know how all that happened from 3, maybe it was 2. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. Believe me. More than 10 years ago. And from say, 2 to 5, you know, he wasn't the guy with the milk wasn't there yet, but the cops came. And they scared me. They said, we're going to tell your father and all this. We know what you're doing with that guy. What are you talking about? You know, and I was guilty. You know, people have been throwing guilt trips on me all my life now, I think about it. Women, cops, and so anyway, I don't know if he told my father or not, but I just know that the chief of police got booze from that guy on Sunday, the same guy. I know that my father got booze from that guy on Sunday, so no way they were going to put that guy in jail. You know, they weren't going to do any harm to him. I was the guilty one, for sure. I got my first job. I got in on the milk run, and we lasted, I guess, about 7 or 8 houses. In those days, it was a long time ago, there was no plastic jugs. They were bottles, and there were about 3 or 5, I don't know how many quarts in one thing, and you'd have 2 or 4 of them, and I'd have to walk up and put them on the cement steps. Well, my balance wasn't very good. Of course, I had a lot of booze in me, and I smashed up a lot of them, I guess, because I didn't last an hour. And he said, you're fired. I said, well, look, and he said, because you're drunk. And I said, I'm never like this. This is the first time. I won't be like this next week. He said, I never want to see you in my car again. So, wow, a lot of things have happened to me on my first drunk. You know, I was ready for this program. A lot of things. I lost my job, my first good job. I lost it. I got stopped by the cops. I was getting molested, bested, and every other thing. You know? So, well, not really molested, but anyway. Erase that. Anyway. So that was a pretty eventful affair. I never forgot that, obviously, I'm telling you about it. If it wasn't a total blanket. Nothing much happened, like I say, until I was 30 years old. Okay, maybe when I was 21, I met a girl, and she got pregnant, and I'm really happy about it now. And we got married, bit of a shotgun marriage, married about 10 years. God bless her, that woman suffered under Pontius Pilate. You know, she really, really took a lot from me. Today she thanks me because she says she's strong, she can meet anybody, and no matter what he does to her, she's seen it. And she's stronger. So, you're welcome, Francis, wherever you are. Anyway, not really. I'm not proud of it. I can maybe laugh at a bit of it now because I was an alcoholic. I still am, but I was very, very active then. And I didn't know a lot of what I was doing. I was very, very immature. I didn't grow emotionally at all, you know, over those years. That's one thing that happens to me as an alcoholic. I don't know what happened to you, but it happened to me. As a result of that marriage, I flew down. I have 2 beautiful daughters and 2 beautiful granddaughters. Even though they call me up and borrow cars once in a while and this and that, it's okay. You know, I'm grateful that I'm able to be there to have a car to loan them. You know, I'm really grateful. And also that they're not afraid to call me up and ask me for something. You know, it's a big thing if you think about it. 1981, I was working the afternoon shift. A lot of things have happened, by the way, but it's just stuff that happens to alcoholics. I was in the Air Force a little bit. I was a cop. Got arrested within 5 weeks, 7 weeks and all. So I wanted first-hand experience, you know, what cops do in the jail and all that. And it wasn't very good. But in 1981, I was living in the South Shore. I sort of had a girlfriend for a while, but she'd moved out and taken most of everything in the house with her. There was no heat in the house. Well, there was snow on the ground. She had taken the fridge and stove, but the main bedroom I used is the fridge. What would I have in the fridge? I had like this much wine left on the floor in that room. I still remember the wine when I was 14. I had bought four bottles of wine with this girl I was sort of seeing as a friend. Not just a friend, because she could drink for drink with me. You know, she was a good drinking buddy. Her husband, her boyfriend, or whatever it was, worked during the day, and I worked during the afternoon, so I had the day shift with her. And we drank two bottles of beer. Bottles of wine. We justified buying this, by the way, for the weekend, in case, you know, we party on the weekend and all that, we'd buy four. But we drank two that afternoon. On my way to work, I picked up a submarine to justify having a bit of wine with my dinner. I hadn't had anything to eat yet, you know. I get there, and I have two bottles of Baby Duck under the seat of the car. Baby Duck. I get to work and I said, tonight I want to work the whole 8 hours. Because I had these panic attacks. I don't know if you know what they are, with anxiety, extra anxiety, it's incredible. I couldn't last 8 hours at work. Couldn't last it. And I said, tonight, I feel like I can. I just had a bottle of wine with her, you know. Of course I'm going to last, or I think I'm going to. And I work in the aerospace industry. You have to, if the security is pretty tight, you have to see your boss before leaving and give him an excuse, and I'd run out of excuses by then. And then you go to security and give him the pass, and they go, look. Well, that night, I lasted till about 9, and then I got scared. I got really scared. Really, really scared. I was afraid that I'd get to my car, and I wouldn't be able to open the bottle of wine because I didn't have a corkscrew, you know. That was my biggest worry of the evening. And I remember going around and asking, breaking conversation with people and saying, by the way, you know that bottle of Baby Duck? You know what kind of top is on it, by the way? And I think back how insane I must have thought I was. Because that's my conversation the whole night, asking people, you know, so that I'd find out, so I could relax. And finally they made me calm down. They said it's wire and whatever. Well, 11:30, I couldn't last another minute. And I ran like heck out, didn't get a pass, went by the security guard. He was asleep. Luckily, it was the same guy that came in the program a few years later, so he was taken care of. Got to my car, and I got the bottle, and I saw it was wire, and I stopped shaking immediately and just relaxed inside. Thank God. And then it clicked. And it's just like a drug addict would do. I couldn't see myself as an alcoholic. My father was one. I couldn't accept that. But I remember drug addicts were like that. As soon as they got there, stopped Matt. Because I'd done drugs too. It's, you know, what the hell, when I drink, I'd do anything. I was a smart ass. And I thought, geez, that could be a problem. Then I forgot about it for the time being and went down to the hospital. I was having an anxiety attack. Drank half the bottle, went to the hospital, and the machine, and they knew me. They wouldn't serve it. They said, we're sorry, nothing we can do about you. And I said, okay, I'll take my business somewhere else. And out I walked, and I said, let's sit there. I'll never see them again. I'll never go back there again. I went down to the Montreal General. It took them about a half an hour to figure me out. And they're bloody smart, eh? I thought I fooled everybody, you know, but I guess I must have stunk high up. I drank another bottle, by the way, that half and another bottle on the way down there. So I must have really, they must have smelled me walking in the door, you know. And I said, look, I might die here. It's just anxiety, but I didn't know what it was. I said, I might die here. He said, they said, if you fall down right here on this floor, we're going to walk over you and leave you there. Oh, God, the pain, man, did they hurt. They don't know what the hurt they gave me. But he said, I'll give you a phone number, though. He said, there's a psychiatric ward or something in the Montreal General. You can call them. Or alcoholic ward. And I figured, well, they got psychiatrists. Everybody knows alcoholics need psychiatrists. And I knew I needed a psychiatrist, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I was maybe insane, but I'm not an alcoholic. I won't stoop that low. And this is really what I believe. And that was it. The next day I called that number and they said, we'll help you in 2 weeks. And I said, I can't last. I knew it was it. I knew my goose was crooked. I couldn't go back to work. I couldn't function. I was freezing in my house. And they gave me the number of AA and I called. Jacques answered and in I came. And I lived happily ever after. Got me to my first meeting and it was West East in the Machine. I guess it was a Thursday night. I'm mixed up with days. I don't know what day it was, but I know the fact it was a Thursday night because the meeting's Thursday night. But at the time I was pretty foggy and very paranoid, very scared. I used to go to the gas and I'd bring like a dollar, a two, a five, and some change, because I didn't know how long I could stand there with the gas. I was so nervous. If there was a lineup, forget it, I wouldn't even stop. I don't know where the paranoia came from, how the fear, just lived in total fear, you know. And I had for quite a while in the program. A few weeks in the program, somebody suggested I needed more help than AA. There's not enough help in these rooms for you, Warren, you know. And they recommended Beaver, foster house, whatever. And there's a lady named Joan there. She said, she will be very good for you. Some of you have heard of her, some of you know her, some of you don't. God bless her. I hated her with a passion. And I looked, in hindsight, I know why, because I couldn't con her. I didn't realize that I was smart enough to con people. It wasn't smart, it was just desperation. That I could con anybody, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, get the prescriptions I want, whatever. But not her. She could look through me like I was a window pane, man. And she scared me, and she really shook me up. Really, really shook me up. So badly that they had to bring me to a psychoanalyst during my stay there. I was going nuts, you know. She just scared me. Petrified her. Anyway, in spite of her, or despite her, I stayed sober. Because when I left her, she said, I don't think you're an alcoholic, Warren. I said, what? And I hung on to this AA thing and higher power thing. I said, what will I do, leave AA? She said, no, stay around AA. It'd be good to stay around AA. But I think you have a living problem. Okay, whatever that means, you know. So I stayed for 3.5 years and I became Mr. AA. I was really good. I was like Johnny Carson. Some meeting, there was one meeting in hand. I'd throw my pencil and all that. There was no secretary. I did the secretary. I was the treasurer. I did the setup. Nope. There's hardly anybody at the meeting, actually, after a while, because I was sort of running the show, I guess. Didn't do a very good job. And I got cured. And I started to do just Sunday meetings. And then I even skipped some of them. But I had a girlfriend who drank and smoked up a bit. I smoked up with her a little bit, but that's not alcohol, okay? So I was all right. In 1985, just to edge, took the edge off, you know. And before you know it, I didn't listen to, you know, I go to the meeting, I can remember like it was yesterday, that they're telling Warren, you got to leave that relationship. It's not good for you. And it had me convinced, you know, on the way out, I'd say, when I get home, that's it. She's out. Or I'm out. It was her apartment, so I'm out. But by the time I get there, which is only a couple of kilometers away, I'm dying to see you again. Hi, honey. Okay. No? And before you know it, I had a drink. I had heard somewhere that if you can drink 2 beers a day for a month, you're not an alcoholic. Finally, you know, I hadn't quite accepted, Jones knew I didn't accept being an alcoholic. The powerlessness over alcohol. It's too much like my dad, too much like things I didn't like. I was not powerless over alcohol or anything else. Except women. So I did the test and I told my girlfriend I'm going to drink 2 beers a day. She says, I'll help you. It'll be great. So the Saturday, supper time, I had a beer and I had half of the other beer and I was feeling damn good. Well, it's been a year and a half, right? Clean for rock, almost clean. Except for a bit of smoke. And only the good stuff, once in a while. And anyway, I had the beer and a half, and I thought, you know, that's enough. So I took half a beer and I poured it down the sink because I knew no alcoholic can do that. And I just wanted to prove I'm not an alcoholic to myself and anybody else. There's only me and her. Who the hell is going to see me, you know? And the next day, I had to wait all the way to 6 o'clock at night before she wants to have another one. What? Boy, that was a long wait. For my two beer, I said, come on, I'm going to have this. So we had two beer, and I didn't feel quite as good as yesterday. And I thought, you know, it owes me a half a beer from yesterday. So I can, you know, take another. I looked in the fridge, it was 11 o'clock at night, and there was seven beer left, and I thought, shit, there's not quite enough, because she's here, she's going to want some. If there's some way I can get rid of her. My priorities are already getting where they should be, you know. Anyhow. So I decided I can't have any more if there's not enough. And the next day, guess what I had? 10 o'clock in the morning, I was on day shift by then, promoted to day shift. A panic attack, anxiety, pure anxiety, and thirst. I never acknowledged being thirsty before. So that was it. That was my first tap done. It took me 3.5 years and a 3.5 year slip. And that was in April 1985, and thank God I haven't. No matter what I went through in the last 20 years, never picked up. I'm mood off and gone, so can't get through a talk strip. Jesus, just like last night, I'm not the only one. Didn't think that would be hard. I'm having a bit of a rough time these days. I guess it's shown. Can't hide anything here. Anyway, what a beautiful program. When I was about 4 months sober, I stayed at my mother's place because my house had frozen. And they wouldn't deliver oil, even though I had cash, because they said I owed them a lot of money. I owed a lot of money to a lot of people. And the bank manager said, but you don't have anything. How can you owe so much money? Should have bought some. I had a house, but okay, they took it back. It's not my fault, anyway. So I was at my mother's, and I was feeling really depressed just before Christmas. And I wanted to die. I really, really wanted to die. And the phone rang, and my daughter, it was the youngest daughter, was on the phone. She said, hi, Dad. I said, hi. And what can I do now? Usually it was like, we need 20 bucks, or we need a ride, we need something. She said, I just called to tell you I loved you. I said, wow. And that, I think that kept me sober like till now. It's incredible. Just a little thing somebody caring about, you know, my youngest daughter. A few years later, they decided for my 40th birthday to come in and stay with me. And I was like, great, two teenage daughters, it's going to have a great time. Oh, my God. The oldest one was going out with a drug dealer. The youngest one was going out with a married guy in the South Shore who's got three kids. Oh, they wanted to get out of the house from their mother because their mother knew too much, you know. And they figured they'd be under my umbrella. And my ex always told them I was really, really rich, so they'd have lots of spending money and everything. Oh, my God. But the program works miracles. It works miracles. I sat down with a member on several occasions to talk about bringing up teenage girls. The oldest one ended up going back to university, dumping that guy real quick, and got married to a guy who was in a band choir, running the choir. Band, and it was just incredible. She became an opera singer. She took some opera lessons, and it's really amazing. I've got a granddaughter, 10 years old. My other daughter, who was going to be a mechanic with this guy because he had a garage, and I went nuts. I used to have a full head of hair, you know, but that caused me to lose it all. She said, I'm 20 years old. I want to go back to school to be an architect, but I'm going to be 30 by the time I graduate. And I said, because it takes 10 years. I said, if you don't go back in 10 years, you're still going to be 30, and you're not going to be an architect. And she went back. I told her I would support her as much as I could, you know, and she could stay with me and all this. She has her master's degree in architecture. That is incredible. No thanks to this drunk, you know. Last year, on my birthday, she called me up and said, a daughter. So I had a granddaughter born on my birthday. And I don't think I deserve all this stuff. How come it's so difficult to talk about? You know, I can talk about death and things that happen bad, and I don't have this reaction. But when I talk about the beautiful things, it just brings up the emotions in me, you know. And it's okay. It's okay. I'm just... I guess I was looking for gratitude today, and I asked God to help me find gratitude, and this is what I'm seeing. You know, I'm seeing everything I should be grateful for, and that I am, but I sometimes forget. That is also why I keep coming back here, because I forget. It's easy for me to forget that I'm an alcoholic. It's easy for me to forget where I've been because things are so good today. And I forget to look at the simple things in life. And like Bob said to Bill, keep it simple, you know. I'm very, very grateful for this program. Even though I make mistakes, I can come in these doors and I can be greeted and welcomed. Before, I was never welcomed, you know. I was treated like, almost like a God, like Jesus Christ. I walked into places and been called, oh, Jesus Christ, he's here again. You know, these things are just that. I wasn't welcome at home. When my wife asked me to leave, I remember waking up and there were three garbage bags. They were alcoholic luggage by the door. And she said, get out, you know, and take everything you want with you. Just get out. Here is not the case. You know, I'm welcome to, and it's kept me sober. My daughter's married to a very, very nice gentleman who is 13 years sober. He only goes to meetings once or twice a year to see Mike Aiken to get his. But he works programs. It's incredible. You know, he's just one of these that got the program. And he, even when he plays golf today, he uses his chip or his medallion to spot the ball on the green. He just lives the program. He works sports with kids, he teaches kids and all, and it's just beautiful. Like, I don't know how lucky a person can be, you know, and I'm lucky. 3 years ago, I met this girl who wanted to move in with me. She was madly in love with me after the second time meeting me, and she's been looking for a guy like me all her life. And I said, well, you can move in with me as a roommate. And we actually did it, you know, separate rooms and everything, separate bills and, you know, and except she did all the laundry, all the cooking, all the shopping, because that's a woman's thing, right? I did all the driving. Guess what I'm good at? It's fair, okay. Anyway. And eventually we ended up in a relationship, and she doesn't know, she brought me a whole circle, because I had quite an identity crisis for a while, and but it's okay. And then in February she got ill. She's 43 and she got cancer. You know, she had cancer. And it's been really rough. Really, really rough for her. The poor woman. I don't envy anybody. I didn't know about cancer before. How, you know, you hear about, oh, the poor guy died of cancer, gets sick. You don't know until you're there and you see. 5 weeks in the hospital, almost, the doctor said, we can't do anything. And we thought we were going to lose her. Then a couple of months of radiation and chemotherapy and carrying bottles and a bag on it. Oh, it's just ridiculous. The stuff and the pain and the pills. And then they said, wow, it's reduced to the size we can remove it. And they don't have to remove as much as they thought. And they removed it all. And apparently there's nothing left in here now as far as cancer is all clear. I'd gone to some meetings and I asked them all. We get in a circle after we prayed. We thought of her in the prayers. And when I told her the cancer's all gone, oh good, next, just another miracle, next. Hey, it's full of it, you know. When you pray in AA, you get miracles, you get results, it's fine. And she's suffering a lot now, you know. But I know she's on the road to recovery, so I'm not worried about it. And she's still quick enough up here that she can catch me on any wrong move at all. Anyway. But sometimes it's hard. I quit smoking and in February she's still smoking. And I'm sitting on the sofa like today, and I see all those pills there, morphine, Ativan, there's real good stuff, and her cigarettes, you know, and all this is tempting me something, but I really have not had the desire, you know. Yeah, the thought has been there that if I ever need something, man, I know what to do, but I guess I'm never going to do it. This is since February, and I haven't really even, I moved to stop and not bothered me, and I'm just going to wind up now because I think it's time. But I'd just like to thank you all very much for being here, because it's from you sitting in these chairs and saying, hi, my name is Bill or Bob or Jan or whatever, that's kept me coming back and it's kept me sober and alive and well and reasonably happy, whether I know it or not. And my kids are very, very grateful that I'm sober, and my family are too. So thanks, Grant, for asking me, and have a good 24, everybody.
Thanks, Warren. It's not my privilege to thank you, though. I've asked Karen.
Well, I'm Karen and I'm a host.